It is time to bring in none other than Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us here, of course, on a Monday morning. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning, and it is a pretty spring morning. Perfect day for talking about spring vegetables. Of course, I've been aching for a change of vegetable. and now we have asparagus, artichokes, peas. I don't know about the pea part. It's really hard to find good fresh peas, but frozen peas are always in season. And I don't know, in some parts of the country, like the South, there could be fava beans. It's a spring vegetable, but I never see fava beans where I live until later. You know, if I went to a fancy grocer today, I'd probably find fava beans, but I'd pay so much for them that I'd probably choke on them. So I'll wait until they get in closer to season. You know, that's one of my rules, is that when you see the price goes down on a vegetable, you know it's come into season. And fruit, the same way. I mean, there have been out of season, you know, because I'm on this diet, and strawberries are among the best fruits to eat when you're on a close to nothing carbohydrate diet. I've been eating from here and there the strawberries, which are, of course, out of season, but will be in season very soon. I mean, in season in the sense that we'll have some Northeast strawberries by early June. In any case, right now there are sensational asparagus in the market, and they're not local. The ones that I've been buying, and now buying a lot of because they're so good, I really want to eat a lot of them while they're here, they're from Mexico. Our local asparagus won't be ready until sometime in May. I always talk about the best asparagus I ever ate were grown by my neighbor in Cornwall, and we used to stand by his little plot of asparagus and cut off the shoots early in the morning that had come up overnight and eat them right out of the ground. Great. I mean, they taste like nuts when they come right out of the ground. So I've been getting these nice, fat, really tasty asparagus from Mexico. $3.99 a pound at Whole Foods, which is not an inexpensive market, but I find it's not really any more expensive than most places are these days. Food, as you've been reading or hearing, the prices of food have skyrocketed over the last year and are going to continue to go up. So you got to be a good shopper to get your money's worth out of this very expensive food. So the asparagus, speaking of money's worth, are the ones that I've been choosing. Now, there are some slimmer ones in the market, but I like the fat ones. And those fat ones, if you just cut off like an inch or so from the bottom and then peel them, you will get a lot for your money because the peeled bottom part of the asparagus is very tasty and not nearly as fibrous as you think once you have peeled them. You don't have to go all the way up the spear. I don't usually use one of those. What is it? I think they say it's a T-shaped vegetable peeler.
Yeah.
Yeah, is that what they call it? So I don't, in general, use that kind of vegetable peeler, but for asparagus, it works great. You put the asparagus down on your cutting surface and just shave off the outside part. So anyway, asparagus, and there's so many ways to cook asparagus. I'm going to get to a dish that I'm going to make today, actually, because I bought all the ingredients yesterday. It's a combination. It's a medley, as we used to say, of vegetables. But the asparagus themselves are worth multiple visits at this time of the year. So I roast them. I boil them. I steam them. And I sometimes sauté them. So let's start with the roasting, which has become like the trendy way. I guess there's grilling, too. I don't ever do that, though. I don't have a grill outside. If I did, maybe I'd try it. I do have a ridged grill I do cook vegetables on the stove, but I haven't done that yet. Anyway, I put them on a baking sheet. And by the way, if you don't want to peel asparagus, just lop off the bottom where it breaks easily, and that'll be the tender part, and wash them well, of course. And by the way, when we get our own local asparagus, wash them very well because they tend to be sandy. I have not found a speck of sand in these Mexican asparagus. I don't know what they're growing in. So I'm not worried, though. That was not a worried. I don't know what they're growing in. So you put them on a baking sheet, either covered with foil or not, depending on your cleanup desires, and drizzle them with olive oil. You don't need to put a lot of olive oil on. I read a bunch of recipes this morning for roasted asparagus, and I don't agree with almost any of them because they have you putting way too much oil on. And they also have you tossing them in a bowl with oil. I mean, why waste a bowl? So put them on the baking sheet, drizzle them with oil. What I do is to get them coated with oil is to roll them around on the baking sheet after I've oiled them, and they will get nicely coated. Then sprinkle them with salt. They should be in one layer, preferably a little bit separate, not all cramped up together. And I put them in the highest rack of my oven, set to 425, and I 450 even, and I roast for 10 to 12 minutes. Usually they brown a little bit, and that's good. If you want them brown, leave them in a little longer. Depends on how fat they are, how long they really take. If you're using slimmer asparagus than I do, 8 to 10 minutes might be more your timing instead of 10 to 12, or even I've done the other day 12 to 14 because they were really fat. And they did not get overcooked. And you can eat them hot. You can eat them at room temperature. You can eat them warm. You can eat them any which way. They're delicious asparagus. You can eat them like candy. They really can be so good. And then, boiling. So I boil, I remember the old days. I guess this was either Dione Lucas. I think it was Dione Lucas who always told you had to cook asparagus in one of these stand-up steamers. Only the stems should be below the water line. The tips should be above the water line because they should just steam because they're much more delicate than the stems. Well, some of that is true. However, I don't find it practical at all. And plus, I don't have a steamer like that. I'm not even sure. You'd probably have to go buy an antique one if you wanted an asparagus steamer like that. So I just put water in a skillet. I'm going to lay my asparagus flat in a skillet. Salting the water and even salting it a little bit more heavily than you think you should, like a huge pinch instead of just a little pinch, is a good thing. It brings out the flavor of the asparagus, and then you won't have to salt them when you put them on your plate in your mouth. They'll be well salted just from the salt in the boiling water. And when the water comes to a boil, put in your asparagus, all washed and prepped, and usually 10 minutes. Depends on the thickness of the asparagus. Could be 8 minutes. I definitely have cooked asparagus perfectly at 8 minutes. The ones I'm cooking right now from Mexico, I think, are going to take at least 10. I haven't done a batch in the skillet yet. Then there's the sauté. Now, I hope you laugh at this, but I learned how to do this 40-some-odd years ago in a class that I observed as a reporter at Newsday, a class for cooking for the blind. And, it's a problem. If you don't have sight, how to cut things, a lot of things. There are a lot of issues there. Now, I must say, I have a very good sense of smell. So I can smell when something is done. And, of course, you always have your sense of hearing, so you can hear when things sizzle or boil. But sight is so important, especially when you're cutting. So I learned how to cut asparagus from this teacher, and she cut them on the bias by rolling the asparagus back and forth and back and forth, keeping the knife in exactly the same place, but moving the asparagus. I thought it was such a cool thing that I learned how to do that. But if you just cut your asparagus on the bias, it's a good thing because you're giving a lot of surface area to the interior of the asparagus, and they cook much quicker. So depending on what you're making, really, cut your asparagus anywhere from an inch long on the, on a sharp bias to even a couple of inches long on a sharp bias. Now, I used to make, I'm not eating pasta right now, but one of my favorite things at this time of the year was always a sautéed asparagus cut like that, basically cut the same shape and size as penne pasta. So I'd boil up my penne, I'd sauté the asparagus, and I could combine the two just as is with salt, pepper, and some more oil or butter, depending on what I'm cooking the asparagus in. Butter is always good. Butter and asparagus and pasta and cheese, you don't need anything more than that. But you can embellish this in a lot of different ways. And one of the ways I used to do it was I would, after sautéing the asparagus, I would put in some diced ham, either cooked ham, you know, boiled ham, or strips could be good too, little fine julienne of the ham, or even prosciutto, and just toss it around with the already cooked asparagus just for a minute or just a minute, and then add some heavy cream and let that come to a simmer, and then put that on your pasta. Now that's, and with grated Parmigiano. That is a spring treat, bar none. So now I think maybe I need to go over a dish that all my Roman friends are making now. I'm on the phone with Rome regularly these days because everybody's in a state. The city is still closed down. My friend Iris, who has had cancer twice while she's lived in Italy, she's fine now. But you would think she'd be high priority for vaccine. But her vaccination date is not until the end of this week. She's been on a list for over a month. But they're still cooking and eating. And they're eating Vignarola. So Vignarola, V-I-G-N-A-R-O-L-A, is a really weird word because nobody can tell you where it came from. It's the name for this dish of spring vegetables, a sort of stew of spring vegetables. But if you ask, I mean, I've looked this up a million times. Vignarola are were the girls who worked in the vineyards and in supposedly and then in the gardens. Vigna could be a vineyard, but it could also be a vegetable garden. And they would collect these spring vegetables and make a dish. I don't know, so that's very romantic. It also is a word sometimes, in the old days, used for a greengrocer, somebody who sells fruit and vegetables. That seems to me more like it, that it comes from that word. Anyway, there are different derivations, and there are different words for the same dish, as is always in Italy. For instance, if you ask for Vignarola in Sicily, they would look at you like, what is that? They call it, they have the same dish, but they call it Fritedda. And in Calabria, in Calabrian dialect, I don't think anybody uses the word Vignarola. I'm not sure if they use this word either, but Ciaudedda. I've heard that word, Ciaudedda. It's all the same thing. A mixture of peas, artichokes, fava beans, and some kind of spring onion. And I must say I've also seen some recipes with mushrooms, which can be a spring vegetable. You know, when the rains come in the spring, the mushrooms pop up out of the ground. The same thing happens in the fall, but there are plenty of mushrooms that are harvested in the spring. So the Americans, maybe even some young people in Europe, expect their vegetables to be green. I actually prefer a Vignarola that is very well cooked, and the vegetables are not that pretty. they're green-gray. So I don't really care so much about every vegetable being perfect. And, of course, the traditional Vignarola, or Fritedda, is made with artichokes, which, in fact, are in season right now. I saw huge globe artichokes in the store the other day that were only $2.59 each. That's a good price, because April is the beginning of the artichoke season in Southern California. And soon we'll get other kinds of artichokes, but those big globe artichokes are usually the first ones. And those are the ones that, you know, I grew up eating whole. You steam the whole thing, and you take each leaf off one at a time and dip it in butter. Why not? And you eat down to the middle. There's the so-called choke in the middle of these globe artichokes, and that's not really edible. But I hate to scrape it out before I cook it because it's such an ordeal to do. So I wait till I eat the artichoke, and you'll get down to a point where there's a purple cap, and you pull that off. It'll come off altogether. And then under that is this furry stuff. You scrape that off with a spoon. And then you eat the base. It's all pure artichoke meat. It's delicious. And, you know, that's the pièce de résistance after you've worked your way into the middle.
Is that how people...
Italians don't do that.
Do people...
If you go to a market in Rome right now, today, and you see a big artichoke like that, the grocer won't let you out of the store without trimming it up for you. So, and they do in Rome, where they really, really treasure artichokes and make them in many different ways. The greengrocers, they're just so skilled at both rubbing lemon and carving up an artichoke at the same time, because as you cut up an artichoke, it oxidizes very, very quickly, and you need to acidify the artichoke to keep it from turning dark, black, ugly. So when you're trimming up an artichoke like that, you know, and you do take off the outside leaves, even if you're just steaming it or boiling it, you do want to rub the outside with a cut lemon. The other way is later on in the season. Now, I'm not going to get into this today, but there will be smaller artichokes, and those definitely need to be trimmed up for you to cook, and those really do need to be acidified. And the way I do that is I get a really big bowl of very, very cold water. In fact, I even put ice in the water. And because heat, by the way, speed ups this oxidation. So your hands should be cold. I knew a chef once who told me when he trained in one of his early stage, you know, training periods in France, was he was put in this walk-in refrigerator and told to trim up a bushel of artichokes. He said, "Why do I have to do this in the refrigerator?" They said, "Because the heat of the kitchen will make them oxidize quicker, so you have to do it while you're cold." Anyway, I put them in ice water that's been acidulated, that's been acidified with a squeezed lemon or two, and depending on how much water it is. And the cut lemon is what I use to rub on the lemon, the artichoke itself. But I'm not going to make my vignarola today with artichokes. I'm going to make it with just asparagus, peas, mushrooms, spring onion, and chives. So did I say mushroom? I'm putting mushrooms.
Yes.
In mine today. Yeah. So I'm not going to put pancetta. You will see many recipes of vignarola and frittata that have guanciale or pancetta. But I'm going to make a vegetarian one today because I like the taste of the oil. I like the taste of vegetables cooked in oil, and that's what these really are. So I will start out with my asparagus, doing the asparagus sauté. I'm going to cut them on the bias and put them in a pan with, I'm going to start with the onion. And I bought these baby vidalias, so I'm going to slice up a couple of these little vidalia onions with some of the greens from the vidalia. I'm going to saute that until it gets limp. Then I'm going to put in the asparagus, and I'm going to saute them until they get pretty much tender. And then I'm going to add the mushrooms, and saute them they cook very quickly. And as soon as they give off their liquid, I'm going to add a little bit of liquid to the pan. And some recipes will tell you to use white wine. I'm not. I like water. I don't want anything to interfere with the taste of the vegetables. And they don't need enhancement. So if I want an enhancement, I would probably add the pancetta. I have both guanciale and pancetta in the house. But anyway, I'll put in the mushrooms, cook them a few minutes, and then finally, the final vegetable will be the peas, because they cook almost instantly. I have a bag of frozen petit pois, the little peas, and I don't expect them to take more than 3, 4, 5. I'll defrost them first, by the way. And for this big bun, this is going to be a main dish for us, really. We can't have it with bread, which is what I really want. We can't put it on pasta, which is a secondary thing. I haven't figured out what we're going to eat this with, but this to me is the main event. And I must say, I'm enjoying my above ground vegetables very, very much. I haven't eaten a root vegetable since September.
Now, let me ask you a question about
that. You could put carrots in here. You could put a root vegetable or two in here. Turnip. Pardon me?
I asked you a question about the meat, that section part of the artichoke that you say.
Yes.
Can that be chopped up and can you make an artichoke soup? Or no?
You could. I'm not sure why you would, but you could. But, I mean, do you want to make everything into soup?
No, but I
have a problem with this because everybody makes asparagus into soup. And
No, not asparagus soup. No, asparagus.
Artichoke soup. I mean, there's no reason not.
You could put a little hot sauce in it, maybe some
potato. All right, if it shakes where you need to be shook. if it scratches where you need an itch, where you have an itch. It's not something I would think of.
Okay.
Because artichoke soup, I don't know. If I saw it on a menu, I would skip over it.
All right.
It's not something, speaking of artichokes, so I've been talking about this for a couple months now, but I'm cooking endive a lot, not just using it as a salad ingredient or as a dip scooper, but it's really, really good cooked. And I made this when I went to my nephew and niece recently, and my niece said, this cooked endive, I never would expect it to taste like this, but it sort of tastes like artichokes. And so I made some the other day, and sure enough, now that I'm in my mouth and I think about it, I can get that. So I didn't know what, I made a lot, and I didn't know what all to do with all of it. We ate some of it just as it was. This is, by the way, just roasted in the oven with oil, salt, and pepper. Cut each endive cut in half the long way and the cut side up so that it could hold the oil as it cooked. And some of it drizzles into the bottom of the pan. Anyway, I put the whole pan, this whole little gratin pan, of endive that I have in the fridge. And then what am I going to do with it? So you know what I made is like a quiche with it, except no crust. So here's my basic quiche filling formula. It's 4 eggs and 1 cup of dairy, which is for me is a half a cup of cream and a half a cup of milk mixed together, beaten up with the eggs, a big pinch of salt, a good amount of pepper, and I grated up. I had a little piece of Emmentaler in the fridge and a little piece of Parmigiano that I wanted to use up. So I grated, coarsely grated on the box grater, the Emmentaler, that's Swiss cheese, by the way, or Gruyere would be great too. And I grated up what was left of this piece of Parmigiano, and I had about almost a cup of cheese. So I had this cup of grated cheese. So I poured my milk mixture with the egg and dairy mixture over the endive. Didn't even have to grease the pan. Enough oil had gone to the bottom of the pan. It was well greased. And then I sprinkled over all this cheese, and I put it in a 350-degree oven. Now, my old oven would have taken probably 50 minutes to cook this perfectly at 350 with a nice brown top, with a lightly brown top. But since my brand new and incredibly expensive stove doesn't work well, mine got done in a half an hour.
Okay.
So it's one of the aggravations of the week. I finally through my own persistence, did I finally get a serviceman here for the stove on Friday afternoon late. He was supposed to come in the morning. But he did come. And he was a nice young man, and he just did a diagnosis on the stove, and it was exactly as I thought. So, I mean, I guess I'm good at this, even without measuring instruments. I knew what was wrong, which is that the bake cycle doesn't work. It never gets up to heat, and only the roast cycle works because that has heat that's coming from the top and not the bottom. But I feel that this top heat is overcompensating. To get the oven up to a general temperature, the top heat has to overwork itself. As a result, everything I put in at my normal height in the oven and at my normal temperature is getting browner. Not necessarily overcooked, but definitely browner than it should.
So are you going to get a new oven, or are they going to fix it?
I hope not. Listen, it's under warranty. I did get somebody. I mean, don't ask. I don't want to go through the whole thing. But yeah. They've ordered three parts for the oven. The young man who came to diagnose ordered three different new parts. Because he's not sure which one of these is not operating, and perhaps two of the three are not operating. So he says we should have the parts by Friday.
Okay.
So by next Monday, it's possible. By next Monday, it's going to be the same situation. So I'm gathering a lot of recipes that I can cook on top of the stove, which works perfectly fine. And hence Vignarola today.
And I want to point out to people that are listening, if you get something like a new stove and you don't think it's working properly, do what Arthur did. It's not you. Don't accept it. Get somebody in there and find out what's wrong with it. Don't accept it.
Well, listen, exactly. I mean, the thing is, you have to. Yeah. I mean, first of all, a new stove is still under warranty any way you look at it. I bought a 5-year warranty for this stove which was very costly, because I know that these new appliances are very, I mean, this is, it doesn't, I, one of the reasons I got it is it looks like a basic stove, but it's far from basic. It does have a computer panel inside, and that may be one of the things that's screwing up. But, you know, all these things can be fixed. That's, so my attitude is it can all be fixed, but in the meantime, I can't do certain things, or I have to be more vigilant looking at it. Like yesterday, I smelled the cheese after 30 minutes, and I know that I should not be smelling the cheese that quickly. So I looked in the oven, and sure enough, the thing had browned way more than it should after 30 minutes. I took it out. In fact, it was done because it was in a great copper pan, I have to say. And that conducts heat very well. And so I took it out, and I must say it was very good. Very, very good. In fact, I would do it again, and maybe again and again. But I might next time put a little ham or bacon in there, too. Hmm. So anyway, quiche without a crust is totally on the keto diet, just to tell anybody who's out there and right. They're curious. It's a really keto-friendly dish. No crust, though.
All right.
By the way, so one of my things in life is that after I've eaten something bad in a restaurant,
yes,
I have to go home and cook it right. So besides making Vignarola today, I didn't have that in a restaurant. I did have badly cooked spinach, believe it or not. Yeah, yesterday I went for Saturday, my first meal in a restaurant since COVID, and it wasn't good. But I had to go. It was a birthday party.
Well, have a good week.
Yay.
We'll check with you next week on...
all right, I hope so.
And see how the recipe goes. Take care. Bye-bye. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com. South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.